Section 10 of The Testament of Beauty by Robert Bridges. This Legimus recording may be freely used and adapted as long as Legimus and the reader are credited. Book 3, Breed, Part 3. The first war of the Essenes was with the poetry of selfhood, those sagas and epic rhapsodies which had burst forth to flood all Europe in the time of the northern invasions, when the hideous Huns, extending the right wing of their havoc, swept down on the old land of the Goths. Soon as their arrows pricked our Teuton forefathers, a clash of arms and yell of battle arose, that in the unsearchable storage of earth's high firmament vibrateth to this day. The warriors, who in vain defence of home escaped the first mauling and massacre, were driven forth, and pressing westward desperately, became in turn themselves ruthless invaders, live firebrands that spread the blast of their contagion to Allemand and Frank, Burgundian, Vandal and Lombard, from Angle and Dane to furthest Celt, and with the sword followed the song, an indistinguishable paean of battle and blood. A sudden eruption of nature, as when earth quaketh, and faltering along the edges of its wrinkling shell, the mountains roar and crack, and vent their ruddy boughs in spume of molten lava, as oft hath been, where now some gracious valley, embosomed in soft azurous hills, smileth, and Eden as fair as God's love was feigned to have planted for man's use. That lost garden regained, once lost through pride, and now, by long stooping, regained, a picture, an outward symbol of the comfort of them whose spirits dwell in the Eden that the Muse hath made her garden of soul in the golden lapses of time. And if, tracing to its source some Heliconian rill, its moss-grown cave is found in the black splintered rock where that once cooled and stayed, a volcanic moraine to bank his blossom to paradise and feed his vines, thereafter to the poet all his joy will seem a strange, mysterious dream, a thread of beauty a turn enwoven in mortal change, and he himself a flower fertilized awhile on the quenched torrent of hell. Now when Rome's mitred prelates ambled o'er the Alps to hold the Gallic provinces, whose overlords their missioners had won to the confession of Christ, the pagan folk, submissive to constraint, were driven in flocks to the font, but got little washing therein. Whatever of kindliness Tacitus once had found, sequestered in the rude homesteads of Germany, was burnt up in that fiery ordeal, which taught them the joy of frenzy and prowess, and the songs whereby they glorified the memory of successful lust, and stirred anew the fierce delight of battle and blood. A wilder strain may be than the lost Bedouin songs that sealed the weird which the angel in Araby foretold to the outcast bondwoman in the famishing desert, and she to her son, that his horoscope was to range like the wild ass untamable, and his hand should be against every man, and every man's hand against him. Wherefore, hitting for remedy on Plato's old plan, when he proscribed Homer from his utopian schools, saying that morals were unteachable to men who imputed mortal passions to the immortal gods, the priests denounced the bards and would have stopped their mouths. But finding that forbiddance met with no regard, they turned to assure their flock by amity, and to comb the fleece they might not shear. Upon which way they wrought some mitigation, and growing reconciled to the art, and grudging to the heathen what might serve the church, they took thought to divert it, and engaged the bards to make like stirring balladry of the Bible tales, wherein, joining themselves with good heart to the work, their first grains of allowance multiplied to pounds, while with their clerkly skill they sat fast to transcribe the old pagan tales, redacted to the amended form in which we know them, with what other numberless wonder lives of the saints they wrote, symbolic masks of Christian orthodoxy, and later mystery plays. So all these diverse stuffs through the dark centuries lay quietly asoak in the dye-vats, wherein our British Arthur was clandestinely christened and crowned, and all his knights cleansed and re-spirited, reclothed as might be, for the dispossessed devils had kindly accepted their rebate, content to find their old home swept and garnished. And though, verily, in their domestication, as 'tis with brutes, they had lost keenness of sense and true compact of character, they flourish to this day the darlings of our poets, who drape their model Arthur to their taste, whereas time was when good St. Andrew strode forth in plate mail. While thus the catechist made compromising peace with the poetry of selfhood, ere the fight was won in rescue of womanhood from the ravish of war, a new era had dawned, and a new strain of song, the young poetry of Breed, and the conflict therewith is in my story styled the Second Essene War. 'Twas no Huns now that stirred the Frankish heart to sing, nay, rather Athena's call, and the gracious emblems of Hellenic humanity, that long had drowned where they had sunk, overwhelmed in the wreckage of Rome, undersucked in the wallow, when Caesar's great ship foundered, with all its toys decadent in the deep, now freshly of their buoyancy upstruggling here and there, to ride in sparkling dance on the desolate sea. Or what grave law had refuge with the Ishmaelite, was stealing back from exile to its western home, its mansion of birthright, and had now already inspired passionate Abelard, who with his ethnic books was heralding in Paris that full renaissance which should illumine Europe, and plant her cities with universities of learning, sanctuaries of spirit, our schools of thought and science, to this day. Full springtime was not yet surely, nor soon to be. 'Twas as mayhap, as the jour de Saint-Valentin, qui chacun doit choisir son père, or a later day of February, when in a sheltered woodland, the sun, with broadening smile, thinketh to intercalate a glad red-lettered feast in winter's almanac, which the thrush boldly announceth, though the migrant birds have yet made no return upon the balmy sprays, but the small housekeepers muster what choir they can. Not elsewise was that first impetuous raid that stormed the rear of the Dark Ages prematurely. And yet the singers were so many that man marvelleth still whence they came, or by what spontaneous impulse sang. As well might be with one who wendeth alone his way beside the watchful dykes of the flat Frisian shore, what hour the wading tribes that make their home and breed numberless on the marshy polders creep unseen, widely dispersed at feed, and silent neath the sun the low unfeatured landscape seemeth void of life, when, without warning, suddenly all the legioned fowl rise from their beauty's ambush in the reedy beds, and on spread wings, with clamorous ecstasy, carillioning in the air, manoeuvre, and where they wheel, transport the broken sunlight, shoaling in the sky. With like sudden animation, the fair fields of France gave birth to myriad poets and singers unknown, who, in a main flight gathering their playful flock, settled in Languedoc, on either side the Rhone, within the court and county of Raymond of Toulouse. Nor were those troubadours hucksters of song who tuned their pipes for fee. Some far glimpse of the heavenly muse had reached and drawn the soul by the irresistible magnet of love, as when in the blockish marble the sculptor's thought of beauty loometh into shape neath his rude hammer-strokes ere the true form is seen. So had the monk's rough hewing of the old pagan tales discovered virtue. An ideal of womanhood had striven into outline, which, though passion heeded not, yet art had grasped, divining fresh motive for skill, whereby knights, churchmen, monks, courtiers, and scholars all, childishly, were enthralled. Even kings found honour in rhyme, whose royalty is to-day its only honour, and to us would seem frivolity, knew we not that we watched beside the rocking cradle of babes, whose prattling tongues should oust monarchic Latin from his iron throne, which not the slaughter of this one innocent could save. Sky-soarers should be reared of such young flutterers, for whom two freaks of fortune happily conspired, a fine fantasy of spirit with light fabric of art. So the faint dream of chivalry, as it took on form, tripped delicately with the delicate music of the tentative language, whose mincing meters imposed good manners on the articulation of speech. While in such play Count Raymond's folk lived joyfully, Provence seemed to mankind the one land of delight, a country where man might fairly choose to dwell, though some would rather praise the green languorous isles, Hawaii or Samoa, and some the bright Azores, Kashmir, the Garden of Ind, or Syrian Lebanon and flowery Carmel, or will vaunt the unstoried names of African Nairobi, where by Nyanza's lakes Nile hid his flooding fountain, or in the New World, far Pasadena's Roseland, whence who saileth home westward will in his calendar find a twin day. But I, in England, starving neath the unbroken glooms of that dreariest November, which wrapping the sun, damping all life, had robbed my poem of the rays whose wealth so far had sped it, I longed but to be in the sunshine with my history, and the names that held place in my heart, and now shall have place in my line, were Avignon, Belcaire, Montélimar, Narbonne, Béziers, Castelnaudary, Béarn, and Carcassonne. And truly I could have shared their fancy, could I have lived among those glad jongleurs, living again for me, and had joyed with them in that liberty and goodwill which men call toleration, a thing so stiff to learn that to sceptics 'tis left, and cynics. In Provence, Jew quarrelled not with Gentile. There was peace and love twixt Saracen and Christian, Catalan and Frank, and, wonder beyond wonder, here was harboured safe, flourishing and multiplying, that sect of all sects abominable, persecuted and defamed, who, with their eastern chaffering and insidious talk, had ferreted through Europe to find peace on earth with Raymond of Toulouse, those ancient Manichees. Restless and impatient, man's mind is ever in quest of some system or map of monde or safeguard of soul, and coming not at truth, even as a dry athirst horse that drinketh eagerly of the first gilded puddle, he espouseth delusion and sweareth fealty thereto. And since common conditions breed common opinion, nations lie fascinated in their swaddling clothes cramped, and atrophied with their infantile suctions. So, in the inmost sanctum of the Hindu mind, a milch cow is enshrined. But those duo Manichees were trifling with no symbols. Their wild faith had grown deep-rooted on the prime obsession of savagery, that first terrifying nightmare of dawning conscience, which, seeing in nature a power maleficent to man, estopped his growth in love. For these zealots ascribed this visible world to the work of a devil, from all time goddess foe, and enemy to all good, in hate of which hell power, so worthy of man's defiance, they had lost the old fear, and finding internecine war declared twixt flesh and spirit, in the authentic script of Paul of Tarsus, him they took for master, and styled themselves Paulicians, the depositaries of Christ. Their creed, better than other exonerating God from blame of evil, and their austere asceticism shamed the half-hearted clerics, whose license in sin confirmed the uncompromising logic, which inferred a visible earthly church to be Satan's device, the Pope his minister, him, the third innocent, who held his wide ambition for the will of God, his fulminating censure for the voice of Christ, and, troubled now that he could neither cleanse nor cure, persuade not, nor command, fell, and, betrayed by zeal, as angry Peter once to serve Christ with the sword, preached a crusade within the fold, that bloody wrath labelled in history the Albigensian War, a sinking millstone heavy as ever pontiff tied round the neck of the church. For the champions of Christ outdid the heathen Huns in cruelty, and in the end was Raymond's county ravaged to ruin, and his folk massacred all or burned alive, man, woman, and child, and their language wiped out, so that a man today, reading Provençal's song, studieth in a dead tongue. Yet many troubadours escaping from slaughter fled to the Italian cities where the new learning gave kind asylum to their secret flame, and ere, within the church's precinct, they had raised a song, chivalry had won acceptance in the idea of sex, and, blending with the worship of the Mother of God, assured the consecration of marriage, still unknown, save to the Christian folk of Europe, whence it sprang. Thus, as it came to pass, the Second Essene War brought the new life, in which, full soon, Dante was born. End of section 10.